People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
This month on the Affordable Housing Podcast, we present Greening the Affordable Housing Portfolio, upgrading multifamily housing, and encouraging tenant involvement. This engaging panel discussion was held on May 13, 2011, during the San Francisco Bay Area's Affordable Housing Week and was sponsored by Eden Housing, Enterprise Community Partners, and StopWaste.org in coordination with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and East Bay Housing Organizations. The event was hosted at Eden Housing's Eden Eastside Terrace in Hayward, California, to highlight the 27-year-old property's recent green and solar upgrades that have not only increased tenant comfort and reduced operations expenses, but will also help to sustain the property for the long term. Presenting the keynote address and moderating the panel is Ophelia Bascal, HUD Regional Director. Panelists included Linda Mandolini, Executive Director of Eden Housing, Marianne Leshin, Director Northern California Programs of Enterprise Community Partners, Inc., and Karen Koh, Senior Program Manager for StopWaste.org.
I'd like to welcome everybody to Affordable Housing Week here in the East Bay. Eden Housing is very proud to be participating in Affordable Housing Week this week. We're also very excited to be doing something a little bit different. Almost every year when we have an event for Affordable Housing Week, we're celebrating a new building, either groundbreaking or ribbon cutting. And last year we actually celebrated the green building that we did in San Leandro on East 14th Street, Esterbrook Place, where we talked about what you can do when you're building new housing to build green. And so this year we thought we'd do something a little bit different and talk about what it means to be a long-term owner and a good steward of your property and to green your properties as they get older. And so we're really excited to have this program today. But before we start, I wanted to actually hand it over to Darren Lowndes, who's on the board of EBHO, to just tell you a little more about EBHO and Affordable Housing Week.
Good morning, and I just wanted to quickly introduce myself. As well as being a board member for EBHO, I'm the executive director of the Housing Consortium of the East Bay. As many of you know, EBHO is a 27-year-old nonprofit membership organization. Our mission is to protect, preserve, and expand affordable housing opportunities. And especially want to thank you for coming this morning. This is a great turnout. We're almost at capacity on a Friday morning of a very long week. Affordable Housing Week is, you know, actually 10 days, so it's a long week. Yes, this is our 15th very long Affordable Housing Week, and I just want to mention that, you know, as we near the end of this very busy week, chock full of grand openings, celebrations, policy discussions, tours, discussions about what's next for the affordable housing portfolio. Just want to, again, thank you for coming out and being a part. Being here today, you're joining thousands of people who are learning about and speaking about affordable housing at events in 11 cities in two counties. We're quite a widespread, quite an ambitious calendar of over 19 events over this long Affordable Housing Week. I want to say a special thanks to Eden Housing, Enterprise Community Partners, and StopWaste.org for sponsoring this event and sharing their experiences in greening their affordable housing portfolios. Please take a moment to just jot down a couple of additional events that are going to close out this week. Later today in Newark is the Newark Gardens grand opening, sponsored by Satellite Housing. Tomorrow is a bike tour of West Oakland, starting at the West Oakland BART station, sponsored by David Baker and partners on urban agriculture and affordable housing. Should be fun. And I'm assuming the weather will be nice. Also, tomorrow's an appreciation day for rental property owners and property managers sponsored by the Oakland Housing Authority. And then Sunday's the culmination of our week, and that is the Housing Sabbath, a very successful, innovative event where EBHO members, supporters, board members go out to congregations throughout Alameda and Contra Costa counties and speak about affordable housing as a social justice issue. It's been a great outreach effort over the last couple of years to bring another interested group into our fight to get more and more resources for affordable housing. And quickly, just want to mention that if you're not a member or a supporter of EPHO, please consider that. And there are guidebooks at the front table, or actually right over here. Please be sure to take one. It's a great resource for not just talking about the events that occurred over this week, but key issues around affordable housing, as well as interviews with the folks who benefit the most, and those are our tenants, and great, great stories and case studies. Thanks again so much, and I look forward to hearing what you guys have to say.
Thanks, Darren. I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Linda Mandolini, the Executive Director of Eden Housing. I want to just say a very special thank you to my staff here at Eden Issei, to Demetrius, Grace, Fahim, Ricky, and Angeles, and also to my maintenance guys who got ready for all of you to be here today. Every day at Eden Housing is Property Management and Maintenance Appreciation Day. We love our staff. It is very easy, well, not totally easy, to build a new building. It is actually the biggest challenge to have a building that looks good when it's 31 years old. And so my staff here do an amazing job, and we're very thankful every day that they do such a great job, because it is a building that's getting older. It was built in 1984. And I want to acknowledge and thank the City of Hayward. Many of their folks are here today, including Councilmember Halliday. They are very supportive of affordable housing here in Hayward. We've done 24 developments in this community and have three more in the works. This community is at the forefront of what it means to build affordable housing and maintain it for the long term. We've come back to them many times to ask them for help as our buildings have aged, and they've really cared a lot about maintaining their stock because, as we all know, to build new costs $350,000 a unit on a good day in a less expensive location. So for us, it's really important to think about how we do this. I also want to acknowledge Jesus Armas on the Eden Housing Board, former city manager for Hayward, also very important to this building and many others in our community. And I want to acknowledge Jessica from Mary Hayashi's staff, Michelle from Senator Corbett's staff, and Andre from Congressman Honda's staff. Santa Clara had affordable housing last week, so we're celebrating for 14 days at Eden. This is our second week of celebration, and we're very thankful. All of our elected representatives have been very supportive of our work, both new housing and old housing. And so I was thrilled today that Ophelia could join us. We at Eden own a lot of HUD properties that have been aging, and last year, we were fortunate to use some of the stimulus money to help retrofit our developments. It's why we chose Eden Issei. It was one of the first to get federal stimulus money from the Green Retrofit Program. And Ophelia Bascal, who is not a stranger to Hayward since she used to run the Housing Authority for Alameda County, is now, thankfully, our regional administrator at HUD. And so she's going to kick us off, and then she is going to be our moderator for our panel. So, Ophelia.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you, Linda. And it is a little bit like old home week as I drove down the streets that I drove to for 20-some years. And I remember when this property actually opened. And the thing that I really was struck, having been a property manager when I was at the Housing Authority, and as we were walking down the sidewalk and I saw Roto-Rooter, I thought, isn't that perfect, a building stoppage on the day that you're, you know. But it turns out it's the drain, so that was a good thing. But you haven't lived until, you know, anybody who's been in property management knows that on Thanksgiving or Christmas Eve, the calls start of the building stoppage or the gas lines out or whatever. But in any case, it's a delight to be here today, and particularly for Affordable Housing Week, even if it's 7 days or 14 days, it's a week of celebrations, because this is about, you know, affordable housing is a lot more than just a dream. Or a goal. I mean, it really is the reality of the place that we're sitting in and the developments that so many of you in this room manage and have developed in difficult times. And one of the things that I want to say that I think is so key to the success of this is really the kind of leadership that arises from the community and the role that elected officials play in that. And Hayward has always been a supporter of affordable housing and of Eden Housing, which actually I think a number of people started it here. And, you know, this ends up being the reflection of that kind of commitment that takes us where we go. But Eden's, our host today, is really an incredible organization. I mean, they've built and maintained affordable housing for over 58,000 people since they began their operations in 1968. So truly a real remarkable feat. Today, our focus is really on retrofitting multifamily housing, and more specifically talking about the green retrofit of multifamily housing. You know, really, it hasn't been that long that housing's been considered part of the whole structure of addressing energy needs in this country. And Congress, back in about in the Energy Policy Act of 2005, for the first time actually required HUD to begin providing periodic reports on the agency's plans and accomplishments to reduce energy consumption and the costs in HUD-supported housing. And I took a hiatus from housing for a while. I spent about 5 years at PG&E and learned a lot more about energy than I ever knew before. And if you know about energy consumption in this country, office buildings account for the biggest part of it, really through lighting and, you know, air conditioning and other, but housing is the other piece. And so this work becomes very critical to what we do to address energy consumption in this country. And as we report on, you know, reducing energy consumption at HUD and the costs in that, you know, when President Obama was elected, he really called for greater federal leadership in this area. As Linda indicated, you know, there was a real impact on this effort through the funding from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. Energy efficiency improvements, large and small, are going to touch over 1.5 million units when it's all said and done. The Recovery Act really was an unprecedented jumpstart to the economy. I mean, it was created to save create and save jobs and really kind of put a down payment on addressing the challenges that the country is facing so that we can really thrive in the 21st century. And, you know, so I think we've seen the results of that. From the HUD perspective, there was about $13.6 billion that came to HUD through the Recovery Act, and they supported three objectives. The first was to unlock credit markets, which is also important to those of you in this room, promoting stable communities and promoting energy efficiency. So energy efficiency is really kind of the third leg of the stool here. And specifically, the objective was to promote energy efficiency and create green jobs. And these investments, you know, have reduced greenhouse gas emissions and saved Americans money by retrofitting these housing to make them more energy efficient. And moreover, I mean, what's really also important about all of this work is it's aided in economic recovery efforts by the investments that have been made and also begun to create that sense that there is an opportunity for really a new market and new types of jobs, green jobs, and greater spending at the community level, which is where these funds were directed, to lasting neighborhood benefits. I mean, that's the end result. Among the HUD program investments is the Assisted Housing Energy Retrofit Program that's invested about $250 million in energy efficiency modernization and renovation of HUD-sponsored housing for low-income elderly and disabled persons. Our experience with the Recovery Act has really demonstrated that these investments in energy efficiency and improving building energy performance, they really go hand in hand with HUD's broader mission to reduce operating costs for affordable housing and increase affordability and to preserve affordable housing. It's estimated that the multifamily green retrofit program and the mark-to-market program, which some of you may be familiar with, at the end will contribute about 27,000 whole building green and energy retrofits to HUD-supported nonprofit and privately owned affordable housing buildings throughout the country. Not a small number, and, you know, really sort of a down payment on where we'd like to go. And then local governments will use HUD funds to construct new units of housing built to Energy Star new construction standards outlined in the Green Retrofit Program. And then there's a neighborhood stabilization program. How many of you have used NSP in any of your projects? Anybody? Okay. So those NSP units, about an additional 25,000 units of housing under NSP funding will be subjected to the enhanced energy retrofit standards, including the mandatory use of Energy Star products in housing rehab. And then there's the WAP program, or the Department of Energy's Weatherization Assistance Program. There's also funding going to HUD-assisted and public housing units, getting the energy improvements through that line of funding. And as you probably know, that funding is directed towards energy efficiency for buildings occupied by low-income households that are, and multifamily properties are eligible if 66% of the residents in each building have incomes at or below 200% of the federal poverty level adjusted by family size. You know, there's been challenges, I know, using that program in terms of, you know, how you calculate the building, and I think we're continuing to focus on how do we streamline this, how do we make it more effective, how do we not have, you know, HUD use one standard, DOE use another standard, to try to make these programs really aligned and leverage the dollars that come from the federal government so they're much more effective. Most of the HUD-supported public housing and HUD-assisted multifamily properties qualified for the WAP program, and the capital investments are determined on the basis of the site audit, so there actually is a look at the property to say what are the best energy improvements to be undertaken, what are the preferred measures that will end up being cost-effective. You know, we're looking for a savings-to-investment ratio of at least 1.0 or greater. And, you know, it ranges from shell and duct sealing to insulation to heating and cooling systems, hot water repairs, combustion safety testing, you know, carbon monoxide detectors. It's just a range of activities. And the best part is the improvements that you get are provided really at no cost to the households who are residing in the units. And in most cases, there's usually no contributions required by the property owners either. So it's a real win-win program. And when you look at the results, the Department of Energy says that this program creates an average energy saving of about $350 per year per household and about $5,500 over the life of the measures. And it reduces, just for example, on gas heating consumption, reduces it by about 32%. And then obviously we get the results, improved results of household health and safety by eliminating energy-related hazards, which is those of you who know that frequently what we find in privately owned affordable housing frequently has a number of, you know, safety issues around heating and other sorts of things. So these make a real difference in the end result of the type of housing that people have, whether it's owned by affordable housing providers or private owners, but gives people an opportunity at least to address it across the housing stock for this particular sector of the population that needs affordable housing. I wanted to say that we are concerned about the utilization of this funding. It runs out in March 2012. There are some states that are lagging in the utilization of the dollars, and so we're really making a final push to get everyone who's qualified to participate in this program to be sure that you're aware of the opportunities and taking advantage of them. I can't imagine that anyone in this room is probably not, but we'll count on you to spread the word and get it out there. So, you know, we know that you need to be in the pipeline soon to make that March 2012 date. So we really want to encourage people to reach out. So this partnership with DOE, you know, we think that the share of multifamily units really that are weatherized could really double, resulting in, you know, thousands of additional units, tens of thousands of additional units with improved energy performance. So, you know, as you can see, as Kermit the Frog said, what did Kermit the Frog say? It's not easy being green, is it? Well, you know, it may not be necessarily easy, but we all know that it's the responsible thing to do, and definitely aligned with our president's objectives in particular. And it really is this kind of, I think, out-of-the-box thinking that's going to help us, as the president says, to out-innovate, out-educate, and out-build the rest of the world. And, you know, I think that in the Bay Area in particular, we have shown what we can do to be leaders in the area of energy efficiency developments in terms of technology, but also incredible utilization of the measures and the technology that's out there. So to sustain the efforts that HUD began under the Recovery Act and to advance further in terms of this transformation, we've really come up with five core principles for shaping HUD's energy plan going forward. These principles are, first, a set investment priorities and performance standards for energy efficiency at HUD. I can tell you in my time period that I was at PG&E, I think this has been one of my biggest things banging on the table at HUD, is the measure should not be number of units weatherized. I mean, we should be looking at what's the effect and what's the result. I think it's one measure, but it's not the only. Second, we need to expand and enhance market-based financing mechanisms and tools to really facilitate this ongoing work in energy efficiency and renewable energy. Third, we need to build partnerships to accomplish effective place-based energy actions. Fourth, provide assistance and training to develop technical competencies and skills for sustainable building practices and behavior. And finally, fifth, to create a result-oriented organization accountable for measurable reductions in energy consumption and greenhouse gas emissions. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Secretary of HUD, Sean Donovan, but Sean is one of the brightest people I've ever known. And next week, as a matter of fact, we do something once a month called HUDSTAT, which are performance measures that have been established. They started doing this when he was in New York, running the housing program for the city of New York, of really taking specific measures and goals that you take a look at, you know, on a periodic basis to see how you're doing. Next week is a look at the whole energy efficiency goals within the HUD, all the HUD programs. You know, what's our success been to date? But really, it's very focused on what are we going to be doing after the Recovery Act? Where do we go forward with this? What's been effective? And there'll be a lot of conversation about protocols and measurement and that sort of thing. So this this session is very timely, and I look forward during our panel discussion to hopefully get more info to take back. So, you know, I think by raising the bar through the use of standards and guidelines, HUD can really sort of target the dollars that are being spent on what's effective, what makes for the best, you know, cost-effective investment in reducing energy consumption. And, you know, we really believe that by increasing the capital through these new financing tools that we're looking at and mechanisms, we can really support capital markets so that there's a sound basis for underwriting these investments in energy efficiency, because that really is still an area in which there's an enormous amount of, you know, there's not clear about exactly when you're making that kind of investment, particularly if you're out in the regular capital market, that they can see the return. But I think we're getting better at figuring that out, and I'm sure that the panel will have some ideas on that. You know, one of the things that the Secretary, when he came to HUD, really focused on was partnerships and stakeholders. And we've really tried to be better partners and stakeholders in this administration, not just people who come in and monitor and tell you what you're doing wrong. We're actually interested in hearing from you about what we can do better, how we can make you do your job better. So we're focusing on those partnerships. We're also integrating and leveraging resources throughout, not only with organizations like yourselves, but within the federal government, working with non-traditional partners. We've begun discussing work with utilities, for example, who, I mean, I kept asking people when we first started talking about this, why are HUD dollars the first dollars in? Why aren't we using utilities first who have money for this and building on that to expand the measures? So at least we're beginning to have those conversations to develop a lot more comprehensive approach for how we can mitigate the barriers that, you know, and coordinate our investments in energy efficiency. So, you know, I think also by instilling these kinds of green decisions and habits within the organization and really making it part of how we look at everything in terms of our sustainability efforts. I think we can do a lot more with technical assistance and education, and HUD can really be a leader in encouraging a lot more of these kinds of practices and facilitate these kinds of discussions so that there's a bigger adoption of green building standards and energy conservation. So, you know, I think this is going to be, hopefully it'll be sustainable behavior within the organization and all the partners that we work through. So by providing this kind of leadership through example, I think that HUD as an institution can also encourage looking for solutions to information deficits, figuring out where the regulatory barriers are, and the limitations within our own capacity and gaps. You know, where can we rely on others to do work that maybe we don't have the capacity to do, but where it can be done more effectively? So really with the goal of increasing the department's effectiveness and relevancy. You know, the nation's current housing, economic health, and energy crisis, I mean, while we were driving here, I used to love that gas station over on Foothill, and that, what is it, right there on Foothill, right across, not far from the old City Hall. That was where I used to get cheap gas. It's even over $4 a gallon. I thought, well, won't be filling up here on the way home either. So, but, you know, it's never been more important that we really coordinate our policies and, you know, how we're dealing with community development, climate change, energy efficiency, transportation, housing, all of that needs to come together. So I would say that HUD has sort of distilled this into a simple goal, which is really to promote energy-efficient buildings and location-efficient communities that are healthy, affordable, and diverse. And with this goal and our underlying sub-goals, we've really made a public commitment, the first really that's ever been publicly stated by HUD, to complete cost-effective energy and green retrofits of public and assisted and other supported affordable housing programs. You know, with the goal of reducing the share of household income that's spent on these combined costs of housing, which include utilities and transportation. You know, I'd like to close really by acknowledging the work of all of you in this room. And you know what just occurred to me is, why isn't a HUD a stop-off place for Affordable Housing Week? So I hope next year we can maybe, you know, have an event at HUD. I'd love to sponsor a discussion at HUD next week. And maybe if we start the discussion now, that would be something we could do. So, you know, we've always been really keen on housing organizations and nonprofits that walk the walk. And I just have to say that our host today, you know, Eden Housing, has been committed, you know, from day one on how they design and construct developments to conserve natural resources and reduce waste and create this kind of wonderful living environment for their residents. And they've been a longtime leader and early adopter in green technology and practices. And, you know, I understand you installed your first solar hot water system over 25 years ago. And my bet is it probably leaked and other things because the technology...
They dismantled it 3 years later.
There you go. But, you know, that's a willingness to try. And the technology is... You know,
long-term commitment to
right.
new
but,
technology.
You know, how things have changed. Actually, you know, if you really wanted to do the most efficient thing with energy efficiency before you did panels, you'd probably do a solar hot water system if you have gas. So, you know, they have one of the first green-pointed rated developments in Alameda County, Sarah Connor Court, who, those of us who knew Sarah, you know, what a, again, another terrific leader and visionary for this organization. And it's also one of the first developers to install a photovoltaic system that powers both common areas and residential units, which you often don't see. So HUD was really pleased to join with the California Sustainability Alliance when in recognizing and honoring the work that Eden did when they were selected as the recipient of the 2010 Sustainability Showcase Award for Multifamily Housing. And Eden just continues to be an early adopter of a wide range of sustainable and innovative technologies and practices. And it's been a real joy when I was at the Housing Authority just to hear about the work that they're doing and to continue to see the work that they do about resident education programs around sustainability,
their digital connectors and other youth programs, and then, of course, all of us know about the Affordable Housing Podcast, right? Yeah. A great way to get info. So, you know, I just have to say, with an organization like this that emphasizes innovative development and, you know, the social services they provide, is just such a leader and one that I think all of us can admire for the work that they do. So our HUD's collective hat is off to you, Linda, to all you and all your staff for the work that they do. So in the final analysis, with a tip of the hat to Kermit the Frog, as opposed to Kermit the Hog, it really is really, really good to be green. And being green is good for our health, for our economy, for creating green jobs and stimulating new technologies, and good for our communities and good for planet Earth. So I'm sure, as all of you would agree, green retrofitting of multifamily housing is a win-win proposition for all. So thank you. So we're going to spend probably about the next 45 minutes or so on the panel, and I'm going to begin by introducing the panelists, talking about just the whole issue of retrofitting multifamily housing, what the issues are. And we've got a great panel. I'm going to go all the way over to my far left, the person I've known the longest probably, Mary Ann Leshin, who is the director of Northern California Programs for Enterprise Community Partners. And she's responsible for managing the affordable housing program activities of Enterprise in the San Francisco office. And that includes green retrofit financing, foreclosure response, public housing revitalization, and capacity building. Prior to joining Enterprise, Mary Ann did some. She was a consultant for a number of years doing program management and program development, and she also worked for the Corporation for Supportive Housing. And you were with Eden for a while. I forgot that. An alumni, that's it. And then where I knew her was when she spent 9 years managing affordable housing activities for the City of Emeryville Redevelopment Agency, which is where we first met. So thank you, Mary Ann. And then we have Karen Coe, who is the Senior Program Manager for Green Building in Alameda County, which is a program of StopWaste.org. And she oversees the implementation of Energy Upgrade California in Alameda County, which is a green retrofit program for existing buildings. It's funded by economic stimulus grants and utility rebates. And she's worked extensively in the last few years with building and real estate industry professionals to launch green building programs, including the development of a Green Point rated label. And she's also worked with Alameda County cities in developing green building policies and programs. So welcome, Karen. And then Linda, who, as you know, is the executive director of Eden Housing. And prior to being the executive director, she was project developer here and a director of real estate development. And, you know, oversees all of their operations from their housing production to resident support services and property management. They have a combined operating budget of over $48 million and a staff of 200 employees. Gone a long ways from where it started. Tiny. And before she was at Eden, Linda was with the Silicon Valley Manufacturing Group in as the Director of Transportation and Land Use Development. And with that, I think that's a pretty good intro of everybody. I think we'll just start with talking about the whole issue here. So, you know, with the building retrofits, I mean, I think a lot of landlords don't really know where to start, and particularly if it's affordable housing. I mean, look, landlords don't usually pay the utility bills for the tenants. So it's kind of like what's in it for them, right? You know, unless they have a commitment to sustainability. So I'm going to pose this question to both Mary Ann and to Karen, and that's, is do Stop Waste and Enterprise have tools that owners can access to help them sort of assess what the needs are and what might be a yield of an investment? And I'll let you figure out who will go first.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, definitely. StopWaste.org has been for a long time working with affordable housing developers and now property managers in providing technical assistance. And so one of the first barriers that we saw in starting to work with retrofitting the existing property is folks not knowing where to begin with, you know, where do we start with our portfolio? And that's something that we can help with, and that we're offering free technical assistance to any project in Alameda County or any developer that's interested to sit down and look at how could we get started, which properties in our portfolio are the best suited for upgrades. And this is something that can be considered as a process that happens over time, or if you happen to have funding is lined up to do major rehab or be in the life cycle of a building where you're looking at those types of major upgrades, you can also incorporate them. So we can definitely help folks either come up with a plan for how to do some systematic improvements as there's turnover in units or as major systems need to be replaced and get to a greening up goal over time, or to figure out how to incorporate the green measures into a major rehab that's already taking place, which is often the most cost-effective time to be doing that.
At Enterprise, we've been working on developing an audit protocol, and we've developed two to date, which is basically guidance to an auditor to go into a multifamily building specifically and identify a package of cost-efficient measures, project the savings that would be achieved if the measures were installed, estimate the cost of the measures, and so forth. So it's really an educational tool. At the moment, these are not inexpensive endeavors, so we've been very fortunate to have funding through HUD, through the HUD Section 4 program, to pay for a limited number of audits each year. But again, we think that that's an important step in the direction of both educating the auditor community about how to go into multifamily buildings, which are different than what I think the auditor community is accustomed to, and I think StopWaste has done a tremendous job in that training and education area, but also educating owners once they see the results of the audits to appreciate the kinds of values that can be achieved by doing the upgrades. Enterprise also has a Charette grant program, and we have a threefold on the table that will give you information about that. It's a $5,000 grant that nonprofit owners can access to basically help in the cost of running a charrette with an architect and associated engineers to take a look at a project at the onset to identify what kinds of green measures can be incorporated.
So, you know, do we need like a protocol that's absolutely clear about when you do an analysis, these are the 10 steps that you walk through? Because in reality, it does vary. Would that help in terms of people understanding as they begin the process that they're being measured across the board, everybody on the same thing? Would it level the playing field in terms of applying for grants, being able to assess the impact?
I think so, and what we found in these early stages is that actually, you know, there are these sort of dueling protocols, if you will, and I think we're in the process now of trying to reconcile that. So, for example, you know, we as I mentioned, worked on an audit protocol, and working with Stop Waste and the EPA's Home Energy Retrofit Coordinating Committee came up with a statewide uniform template for a protocol, and then learned that the State of California program that runs weatherization was coming up with their own multifamily audit protocol, which differed in some respects. So I think we're getting there, but it would be nice if we can get to the place where there is sort of a single standard and metric, because now we've got savings to investment ratio for one source. We got, you know, other metrics for other sources of funding. So it is still a little bit of a complicated situation.
Yeah, I mean, Mary Ann's captured it. Unfortunately, for multifamily properties, there are a lot of different programs out there, and they'll have different standards that they've been using. So we've been doing a lot of work over the last year statewide to try to reconcile that, working with both the utilities and the Energy Commission, and also HUD, and some of the Wayne Waite from HUD has been very active in that as well, helping on the weatherization side to try to bring some alignment in the tools that are being used by different programs.
And definitely something that I think, you know, the more support we get with the California Energy Commission, from the PUC to here, the importance of leveling this and getting one standard and the impact that it will have for financing and other things would really make a difference. So, you know, I think at some point if we could call upon people to help be part of that discussion with the Energy Commission and others that are make these kinds of decisions, it would make a real difference. You know, Linda, when how have you done your assessments? When how do you pay for them when you do them?
We have a low-hanging fruit approach here at Eden. We knew we had a lot of old buildings. We knew we needed a lot of work done. And Melanie Burnett, who's on our staff, is our green asset manager. And she had been doing a lot of thinking about what could we do. And one day I was out riding my bike with a guy, and we were chatting about what we did for a living. And it turns out he audited large-scale industrial, like hotels and other schools, to help them weatherize their buildings and energize their buildings and save water and all this stuff. And I said, wow, would you come talk to my staff? So this was before anybody had all these protocols. We had started talking about this. And so Brett, who came into my staff, started talking about when does it make sense to do solar? When does it make sense to do water efficiency measures? Enterprise gave us a grant for $26,000. And we audited 47 properties. And we went through and we looked at water, energy, and trash. It was very simple. This is not, it's not a super high-tech study. And it identified, we were spending about $2 million a year on utilities. And it said we could save $1 million a year in utilities. The math was pretty straightforward for us. And so we said, wow, that's pretty good. What do we have to do? And then we went the next level at all of the properties, and our timing was impeccable. The economy tanked, and the stimulus package came out serendipitously. The next 6 months later, we had GRP, and so all of our HUD properties had been audited, so we knew what we needed and where our biggest bang for our buck was going to be. So for us on the auditing, you know, we could do something a lot more in-depth, but you don't have to wait for that to start. And I think that's really the important message. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit and savings that can be had from doing really simple kinds of energy audits. I believe one of our water districts came in and inspected one of our properties, and already we know we can save a ton of money just, and it was a free audit. They just came in and said, do this, do that, do this. And you're like, wow, we're going to save a lot of money on water. And so for us, it's not just about energy in California. I think one of the things we were really concerned about is everybody's talking, it's, you know, solar is not the be-all and end-all. It might actually well be the most expensive choice. And so we really felt very strongly that we wanted to look at water is a huge expense line item for us. It's a major natural resource for California. So anything that didn't come with water wouldn't work for us. So it's water, energy, and trash, and those are our three areas. Not very high tech.
You know, and I think the water is the next big issue. I mean, if we're able to solve the electricity and the gas usage, water is huge. And you know, just the growth of the population, what's available in California will send you there. But it's also, I think, you know, the point that you've made, it's a little bit like the love affair with LEED. You know, everybody wants solar. But, you know, just as you stated, the real thing is get all the low-hanging fruit before you even think about solar. And, you know, Marianne, can you talk about, I mean, there's like an alphabet soup of programs that are offered. And, you know, why do we have an Energy Commission and why do we have the Public Utilities Commission and those sorts of things? But
don't ask me to answer that, please.
All right. We won't ask you to go there. But maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, state and federal programs and what's available and that sort of thing.
Sure. As I was thinking about the answer to that question, I was wondering if there'd be a flip chart, but since there's not, I'll just do my best to sort of give a framework to it. So there are a lot of agencies, and one of the things that we were doing when we first got involved in this work was to try to create a little bit of a roadmap of who's out there. A lot of these sources and agencies are entities that we'd never worked with before as housers. So on the federal level, certainly we look to HUD, and HUD has, as Linda mentioned, and Ophelia, you did, the Green Retrofit Program, which I have not heard anything to date about it being refunded, but to me seemed like a really great, really right on the mark kind of a program. Other than that, I know that there's an Energy Innovation Fund supposedly in the offing with an multifamily component at $50 million coming up. We hope that actually happens. And then you've got the Department of Energy, DOE, which has the weatherization program under its auspices. the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant, or belovedly known as the EECBG program, and the State Energy Program, or SEP. Those three are administered at a state level. And then lastly, the Department of Energy also ran its own innovation pilot, a weatherization innovation pilot, which is just now getting underway. So it'll be exciting to see the results of those projects and what they or how they inform additional weatherization programming. So going to the state level, that's really where the most of the action, if you will, is happening. So as Ophelia mentioned, the Weatherization Assistance Program, which is a DOE program, is administered by the Community Services and Development Department here in the state of California, or CSD. And they send the money down through weatherization providers, which are locally based entities. Then the CSD also administers the LIHEAP, L-I-H-E-A-P program, which actually is money that comes through the Department of Health and Human Services. So it's another layer out there. But essentially the state administers that, and it, again, trickles down through local providers. Also at the state level, you have the California Energy Commission, CEC, and they administer the state energy program, the block grant program. Most of that funding that we've seen in our world has come as a result of the infusion of ARRA dollars. And the only additional piece I'd add there is that in terms of multifamily housing, where the action really is happening is under the state energy program, there were a few awards that were made specifically for multifamily programs. Here in the Bay Area, the program is the Bay Area Multifamily Fund. That's a loan effort, and I'm hoping we have an opportunity to talk about the financing piece, but that's a program that Enterprise and LIFT is administering. And there's also some programming through Sacramento.
So maybe if we make it personal and talk more about numbers that you're actually paying for, you might, you know, we can reinvigorate your interest here. So how many of you ever look at your PG&E bill and look at all those little charges down at the bottom? So one of those charges is something called a public benefits fund that was, you know, has been in effect since about 1998 and was through a ruling of the PUC for an add-on for the investor-owned utilities for their bills to really create funds for renewable energy, energy efficiency, and research and development. And just to give you kind of a sense in terms of, you know, this is for all building types, but every time the utilities get a rate case, this is figured in. So on the residential energy efficiency, that you get about $300 million a year coming from ratepayers for this. So about $260 million goes towards existing, and about another $40 goes to new. Then there's renewable energy programs, about $72 million going towards that. This is part of the governor, former governor's intent to, you know, relaunch all the solar roofs that was out there. The LIEE is about $310 million a year. And then, you know, I would hope everyone in this room has every one of their eligible tenants signed up for the CARE program, which provides a reduced rate for utility usage by low-income families, and that's about $875 million a year. So, but you have to sign up for it, and so if you don't have your residents signed up for that, they're not benefiting from that. So, you know, there's a lot of money, I mean, being put in this, you know, in this sector. And to Mary Ann's point, though, most of it goes towards single family. Not as much towards multifamily. So, you know, maybe, Linda, this would be a good place to ask you. I mean, you know, the MASH program was out there. Some of these other programs are out there. Have you found them, been using them beyond the federal, you know, stimulus dollars you
talked
about?
So we got HUD-GRP for Melanie 5 properties. And then MASH has been huge for us. We got the first MASH grant in California, multifamily affordable solar housing. The acronyms are just beyond me at this point. But it was for Petaluma. It's almost $900,000 to retrofit that building with solar. One of the key components for MASH, for our grant, was the tenant involvement in resident education. And so at that property, actually, the Boys and Girls Clubs is our services partner. And so one of the reasons we won the grant was because we had a whole push around educating the tenants on conservation behavior. We have looked hard at some of these LIEE, WAP, whatever, you know, all the ones that are really targeted for single family but have money available for multifamily. And we're running up against one very big problem with these. They really don't work in multifamily. So the federal dollars, San Francisco has figured out a way to use them, but we don't have an administrator for those funds here in the East Bay. So we can't access those dollars, which would be substantial, $4,000 or $5,000 a unit to retrofit units, because we don't have anybody that's willing to do the same work that San Francisco has done to come up with a mechanism to make it work for multifamily. So, for example, there's like 2,000 pieces of paper per tenant that need to be filled out. It's prohibitive, and you can't pay for common area boilers. I mean, the same problem with the state program. You can't use these programs to pay for things that are common use types of things. So furnaces, boilers, things that would benefit a whole building and also benefit the residents don't qualify. And so trying to readjust those, and I see Ross is here from the California Housing Partnership, because we actually, there's a piece of legislation to my state representatives pending right now that would help make it better and more possible to use the LIEE program. Did I get that right? Soon to be named the ASEP or ASAP. What is it called? I can't. It's crazy. That program really could make money available to do buildings just like this. But it's really not workable in its current form. It only works for single family. And the challenge there is the single family contractors have a lock on the business. They don't want to do multifamily, but they are not spending all the money. So we're giving up, I think, $70 million a year is not getting spent. 25. So it's money that we could easily spend if we could make it more workable. And so there is a bill pending in the legislature to make that more usable. We've also taken advantage of solar tax credits. We did a portfolio level financing for solar. So 27 properties simultaneously are being retrofitted. We cobbled together solar tax credits and MASH and GRP and all of the rest of the stuff. We got a $500,000 program-related investment loan from the San Francisco Foundation to Eden that we lent to each of our buildings to finance the solar retrofit. The only way we could have gotten that from the San Francisco Foundation was to do it all at once as one big project. And I will just say a note to all of the developers out there. We didn't wait for year 15, which is that point in time with our tax credit program where you can do this most easily. The money happened to be available now. And so we said, okay, we are just going to go get this. It has been head-hurting, just really hard to work with 27 lenders and investors, 27 packages of lenders and investors on these projects. And everyone has to approve it. Everyone has to say it's okay. Everyone has to look at their tax consequences. I think at the federal level, some small changes you won't have any tax consequences if you spend money upgrading the buildings. That would be a great thing to write somewhere in some little bill. Upgrade for energy improvements, no tax consequences. That would make my investors happier. But I would just say it's really cobbling together the money. I think Melanie must spend like 18 hours a day trying to figure this out. I clearly don't know as much as she does. We could hire an army of people to do it for us. So some simplification is absolutely warranted. I mean, Stop Waste has been great. You know, we could not do this without Stop Waste and Enterprise helping us navigate. So,
you know, and I think that, I mean, some of these is just state legislation, for example, in the PUC, that doesn't want private owners to benefit from money collected from ratepayers or other things because they feel like, shouldn't you be maintaining your building on your own? Which, of course, has a real impact on affordable housing providers who are not looking just to own the building, take the taxes out of, you know, the tax benefits and turn around and sell. But it's been an education for the PUC to understand this. And I mean, I thought they had regulations and things. The day that I tried to explain utility allowances to them was, you know, I said, well, see, if they pay this and the rent goes up, and they're like, okay, let's go through this one more time. And so, you know, I mean, HUD itself needs to address the whole issue of how utility allowances are calculated in affordable housing, because it does not, the tenant does not benefit, as we know, from a reduction in the overall cost. So, you know, that's kind of an issue. You know, let's drill down a little bit. And Karen, could you talk about what's available at the local level?
Sure, yeah.
So one of the things that we're trying to do in Alameda County is to be a one-stop shop for those property owners that are looking to retrofit homes. So we're working both with individual property owners as well as California Energy Commission in creating a navigational tool that's going to help folks navigate this crazy alphabet soup of programs. Now, because in addition to the ones that Marianne talked about, which were all for restricted for low-income properties, there are also just general programs for multifamily buildings that people might not be aware of. If you need to replace your water heater or some other piece of equipment, there are also utility rebates for that, which are available to all multifamily property owners, not just affordable. But these are all things that you can access. And one of the things we felt like really we could do as a value add was to help folks figure out, okay, if you're going to do some improvements over time, which programs do you take advantage of at which time? And sort of save some of that headache up front of trying to figure out, you know, what paperwork is worth doing, because there's unfortunately right now just a little bit too much bureaucracy around all of the utility programs and weatherization. So what we're doing, and there's a flyer that you can pick up at the front there, which is about the technical assistance program that we're offering, is just to try to, one, sit down and help property managers prioritize how to go about greening their portfolios, and to also help in that process is figuring out where are there relevant rebates or other financing programs like Marianne's or others that would be applicable to your type of property. And so cut out a lot of that upfront headache. And then we also are offering rebates for properties that are at a point where they can do some more substantial green upgrades and that want to receive a green building rating and get Green Point rated. So we are offering rebates to offset that cost of getting the green rating where properties are doing the more substantial upgrades. And so, I just also wanted to mention that there are going to be some additional resources coming online statewide, hopefully by the end of the year, that can help in this process. We are working closely with the Energy Commission and a number of the utilities to try to create a portal whereby a property owner, so you're in another county and don't have access to our technical assistance program, you could go to the Energy Upgrade California website, which is currently now really targeted just to single family buildings and single family homeowners, that there'll be access for multifamily property owners to go and to understand, you know, input some basic information about properties in their portfolio or an individual building, and then to answer some basic questions about the age of different systems in the building and so some of the characteristics, and then sort of have an automated way to sort through the number of different utility programs that they might be eligible for, and not just utility, but maybe other types of financing programs. So that try to be more of a statewide one-stop shop to help take away some of the confusion around which programs should we even bother with.
Oh, if only we'd had that 2 years ago.
You know, Karen, one of the things you mentioned was Green Point rated, and a number of the building certifications are really for new buildings, you know, from LEED to Green Point rated. Enterprise has, I think, Green Communities criteria. Are you working on something similar for buildings that have been upgraded? Is there a plan to do that?
Green Point rated program is the only green building rating system that does address existing buildings and the improvements made to them, both on the single family side as well as for multifamily. And we worked with Build It Green, who administered the program over the last 2 years in the launching of the pilot for existing multifamily buildings. And there are about 1,000 units throughout California that participated in that pilot program. So we were able to kind of see, you know, what works in a retrofit context, and how could the different standards that are sort of known in new construction be tailored to deal with the situations where you might be making upgrades over time. And that's one of the key things that's different about existing buildings compared to new, is that it's typically not all going to happen at one time. So how can you do things in a phased way? And that's why in our technical assistance, we're approaching it as, you know, you may not have all the resources up front, but if you have a sort of game plan of how you want to approach your property, you'll probably make better investments over time and get to that same goal if you know, you sort of at the upfront, it might make sense for some properties to do a whole building assessment, even if you don't have all the funding lined up to make those improvements. Then you can prioritize, and you know later down the line if opportunities come up, that's where you want to target them.
Marianne, the Green Communities criteria also has a point system for substantial rehab and moderate rehab, and is the criteria that's used by the Green Retrofit Program by HUD. So I think we're trying to, you know, get in sync with that idea as well.
So Linda, is that something that you've gone out and actively sought for your properties where you've done these retrofits to try to get some kind of rating on them? And if so, why? And if not, why not?
Yes. Thank you, Melanie. I actually know Pacific Grove is the demonstration. It was part of the pilot for, it's a property here in Fremont that's also HUD financed. It's in HUD 811. That was part of the pilot for the Greenpoint Rating Program. You know, the trick there is that I care less about the rating, honestly, than I do about how much money we're going to save. Or really, what's the best way, bang for your buck. I do think there's some cachet to the rating. There's a lot of cachet on the front end. You know, city councils love LEED, green. They love all of that. So it's always nice to get that on the front end. I think on the back end, it's really a question of how much does it cost us? Because when you've got $5 to spend, if you're going to spend, you know, a dollar of it getting the certification from the certifying entity, that's a dollar we just don't have on the back end. So for us, we care because we want to know, most important to me and I think to my staff, and we're not there yet really at Eden, is real cost-benefit analysis. What really works? Where do you get your biggest bang for your buck when you make these investments? And we are so early in some of this that it's hard for us to tell. And I think the places that I think the Stop Waste and the Enterprises and the HUDs of the world could really help us most is to really do some long-term longitudinal studies on what the best investments are. Because I will tell you right now, when you go out and somebody does an initial study and says, oh, you're going to save X, that's probably not true. I mean, it's probably X minus something, or it could be X plus. Nobody really knows what the savings are going to be. And one of our challenges, honestly, on savings is that the less we use, the more we get charged. So Eden's goal is to save 10% a year for 3 years on energy, water, and trash. And it's usage. It's not a dollar savings. We think it will translate to dollars, but we don't think it will translate directly. So, for example, here in the East Bay, Ed Mudd just announced that they increased their water rates because they were conserving too much. Damn! You know, there we are being good stewards of our natural environment, and we're getting charged more for the privilege. So, I think we have to be, somehow saving has to translate to rates, and I don't know how you work on that, but I think for us, getting certified is important. We like that. We like the cachet of that because we use a lot of public dollars and people like to point to that. But I think at the end, the real information that will be most helpful is where is your best investment? Because we don't have unlimited dollars for these investments.
You know, and I think that's exactly, I mean, sort of we started this conversation about talking about measurement and what are the appropriate measures and, you know, is it kilowatt hours? Is it, you know, cubic feet of water used, et cetera. And, I mean, we'll get a little bit later into resident behavior and also just public policy questions. But, Marianne, do you have, I mean, you guys have, you know, a big portfolio and you've done a lot of these kinds of projects. Have you seen an impact that you can quantify?
Well, we did a study a couple of years ago called Incremental Cost Measurable Savings based on the Enterprise Green Communities criteria. And granted, it was a limited study that sort of aggregated a lot of different properties from different parts of the country, but it was a first step in that direction. And I think we have some plans to move in a more targeted way moving forward. But what this study showed was that the cost of doing those green communities criteria measures was about $4,500 per unit, and the actual savings that were identified from this cohort of properties that we studied was about the same amount. It was about equivalent. There was a range, and again, some of the range reflects the diversity of the properties in the study. In terms of just the energy efficiency and water measures, there was more of a stark contrast wherein the costs were about $1,900 per unit to do just the energy and water measures, and the savings was in the order of about $2,900 per unit. So there really was an increment of savings. It just wasn't paying for itself. There was actually an increment above. But we are working on acquiring a third-party software system. I know, you know, Linda and her staff, Melanie, are, you know, also looking at this, and Stop Waste is looking at this on a statewide level to create more scientific analysis where we can take the pre-retrofit data, compare it to post-retrofit, actual performance, and really prove this concept out. And I think there's just tremendous impetus around the country. All the large portfolio holders are moving in this direction. So I think it will come. And certainly GRP program, too, will I think, have some data to show.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, is that, you know, we've now moved beyond, as I said, HUD was measuring, you know, how many units got retrofitted, you know, without looking at investment, net results, et cetera, and as we drill down into this. But one key part of this ends up being resident education, I think. And how many of you are familiar with the work that SMUD did on what impacted most their scene conservation? Does anybody know about this? This is when they told you what your neighbor was using. What they did was they presented in your bill on your block, you know, how you compared to everybody else on the block, and it drove usage down tremendously. You know, this whole, I mean, there's a lot of really interesting data out there about behavior among consumers that we can probably learn to use in the process. But, you know, short of yelling at, you know, your spouse or your children or who your partners, whatever, about turn the lights off, what else can you do about resident education? I mean, we'll start with you, Linda.
So last year I went, Enterprise Communities now invited me to a session at the Garrison Institute in New York. There's this developer named Jonathan Rose who is on the board of Enterprise who's he started this little institute on behavior change in three areas, and one of them is climate change. And so I went to this because one of my staff said, you got to go do this. And so behavior change starts with me. So I went, because I've been a skeptic, and I went to the session, and we talked a lot about, it was office building developers, large, big, huge developers like the related companies, you know, tens of thousands of units nationally, and a whole bunch of small affordable housing developers. I mean, Eden's pretty big, but in comparison to related, we're like Lilliputians. And they were all talking about how can you conserve by getting your residents and your staff to change their behavior. And it really changed the way that I think about this work, because I actually have become more and more convinced that you could actually have bigger bang for your buck with behavior change than you might actually have with a solar retrofit. And there was a guy there, his name is David Gershon, and he's written this book called Social Change 2.0, which talks about how you create social change movements. So the SMUD thing is one of those. SMUD is Sacramento Utility District, is one of those kind of things. And so they talked about, you know, what would incent people to change. And there's sort of people change because they want to do it, because people are motivated by altruism. People change because they save money. That would be my motivator as Eden Housing. You know, there's different reasons to motivate people. So we started thinking about what could we do, and we decided at Eden really that we'd start with us, with our staff, that we would have an effort where we would decide that we would be green as a company. And that's why we have, you know, all my guys are wearing green shirts. That's not a mistake. The shirts are green by design. We said that we were going to do it. We were going to walk the talk. And so in our main office, we compost. We brought in the compost trainers from Alameda County Waste Management. And I learned how to compost. I can't stand composting, I have to tell you. But I'm now thoroughly trained. I've trained my husband to compost at home. And my staff is all doing all of the things you need to do to recycle. And we started really with our residents with recycling, because it was something that they could personally do. If you go upstairs or walk around, you'll see people have their recycling bins, and people got really interested in it. And we've enlisted the kids. We have a technology program called the Digital Connectors. They actually have created green videos to be used in our properties. So, you know, your kid brings home a video, you're going to watch it because you like your kid. So a little bit of brainwashing from the child to the parent. But we're really working as a company to say, okay, we're going to start with conservation. One is it's really going to be about trash. Number two is about water. Number three is about energy. And so we're taking them kind of one at a time. And we started with pilot projects at smaller properties, because you can't change behavior at 80 properties simultaneously. So we really seeded some programs, thanks to the MASH grant, actually. We started with those properties and looked at what could we do to create resident education. So we, you know, pizza parties, incentives, all of that work to get the tenants to get engaged, but also to get our staff engaged. And one of the things we really care a lot about is recognition. We've been recognized locally by a whole bunch of our communities. We just got an award in Southern California in Orange County for our green work there. The council presented to my staff an award at the council hearing. And we have worked very hard to both encourage and to really continue to message. So at all of our operating meetings, we have a section on green. So our staff, nine of them, I think, have, is it nine, Melanie, have HUD certified green property management certifications on the management staff. So we really started with, it's us. If we as a staff aren't going to be green, then our residents aren't going to be green. So behavior change started with the people who work for Eden, and it's moving out to our residents. And we've adopted recycling at 100%. We just launched water conservation throughout the portfolio. We have training manuals and how to run a meeting on all of these things. Enterprise has also given us a grant to actually expand this work. So it's this is the hardest work. It really is. Because, I mean, think about it. Do you really want to, you know, not drive to that meeting? Do you really want to get on BART? I mean, there's all of these personal things. Think about what it takes for you to change your behavior. I know that Therese, my CFO, has those stickers on her Prius or her Honda because she gets to be in the carpool lane. She's motivated by the carpool lane. The green thing, I don't know, maybe not so much, but the carpool lane is a total motivator. So when you're looking at behavior change, sorry to pick on you, Therese, but she admits it freely. When you're trying to change behavior, you have to figure out what motivates people. And I'll tell you, cost matters. Our residents are saving a lot of money. The energy changes that we've made are saving them, what's the percentage, Melanie? Probably 30% on their personal utility bills. So when you make these changes, some of them will really save money. And so, you know, for us, it's sort of, what would motivate change? And not everybody's motivated by cost. Some of it is that I want to be as good as my neighbor. The office building guys that I met, it was all about which business could be greenest in their building. Like XYZ law firm wanted to be ABC law firm because they wanted to be greener, because it was all about that imprimatur. The related companies will tell you that the green labeling on their market rate properties affects their ability to lease their units. It has real value added for them in their ability to get new tenants. And there's a price premium that people are willing to pay for that. So people are motivated by different things, but I think the behavior change is absolutely essential, because you will save more by conservation than you will with any retrofitting.
You know, and maybe Karen, you could speak to, is there, you know, materials or programs or that you're on a local basis that you're making available to help address change behavior, encourage conservation?
Yeah, we're just getting started into the resident education component, that we're really beginning with the building owners. And one of the things that we're hoping to host in probably the early part of next year is a building property manager training for all the properties that we're working with, and probably some of Enterprise as well, to help, you know, help staff really understand how to really implement this and integrate this into their long-term operations. So that's the first step for us. And then we do hope to engage in more of the tenant education, not related to our green building program. We actually do a lot of conservation-related programs at our agency. So one that I thought of as you were talking, Linda, was just our schools program is involved in a number, 80 classrooms through 80 fifth grade classrooms throughout Alameda County, and they help the children learn how to become garbologists. So getting to this trash issue, you know, they go and they sort of look at their school and they, you know, do a little waste audit and see what's in their lunchtime trash and what's going in there. And some of the schools have been very effective at, you know, for example, a school in Alameda has really helped one class going and doing this audit has helped educate the entire student body. And their goal is that in within a couple of years to have their overall trash reduced by 90%. And then they take that from the school and they go into their homes
and they go wherever they live. So it could be multifamily, could be single family, and they go back and they educate their parents. They look in their own trash. They get, you know, tips on how to do recycling. They bring a little compost pail home for a week and see how much is in their food scraps that they collect over that week. And it's been, this is a new program that we just launched, but so far it's been very effective and sort of for people to see the impact starting from, you know, one big building, one location, and extending to your personal lifestyle and how could that go on. And maybe you can sort of tell a few friends and people make pledges about, you know, what do they think they could actually implement as a long-term change.
That's great. Marianne, is there anything you'd like to add about what Enterprise's efforts in the area?
Yeah, just a little plug that we do have some new resident engagement tools that Linda was sort of alluding to. They can be found on our website, but I think the key feature that we try to do is create tools that are really a framework because you know, residents differ in different buildings, the building types differ, the motivations, as we've been talking about, may differ. So we're trying to create tools that owners can customize and tailor for their own use. So not trying to dictate, per se, this is the right methodology, but just provide a framework through these tools that have modules for energy, water, recycling, healthy living, transportation, and the like.
And, you know, I think that, and just to circle back around to the beginning of this in terms of the impact on understanding behavior, because, you know, you can, most of the literature on change will tell you this is not about logic. It isn't. You can, you know, tell people things and assume that's going to change the behavior. It won't. So, I mean, I think we need to really be aware of and cognizant of. I mean, one of the things that was very interesting in terms of, if you look at California's energy use in comparison to the rest of the country, it's a pretty flat line since they instituted the changes in building requirements and other conservation issues. But as you get new things, for example, flat panel TVs, you may save on, you know, you may have a more energy efficient refrigerator, but if you install a flat panel TV, your use goes up. And so there's, you know, just these constant technological issues, and that's why the state, for example, was thinking about requiring certain standards for those types of TVs that wouldn't be, you know, no one else was going to require them, but it's partly because of that strong desire to continue to drive that usage down. I want to finish up with the sort of the public policy questions, and then we'll open it up to the audience for questions. So we've talked about, I mentioned federal utility allowance calculations being an issue. You know, Linda, you talked about the programs not being aligned, and Karen, you mentioned the extensive amount of paperwork in just applying for stuff that drives people to really have to make a choice, do I want to invest this in that? If you had to pick, you know, whether it's the state or the federal level, what would be, and I'll just start with Marianne, what would be the, give us two or three things you'd like to see changes?
Right. In my mind, I really think that the focusing programming in multifamily buildings that are based on a whole building performance-based model as opposed to the widget-by-widget, silo-wise approach would really, really be helpful. So looking at, you know, understanding what a building needs, committing to funding it in a way that makes sense for owners like Eden Housing with the not necessarily always logical financing structures that exist behind the properties, really acknowledging where these buildings are, and coming up with a streamlined, robust funding source to take on the whole building approach.
I'll just follow on Marianne's train of thought, because I do feel like also that is the biggest problem that we're facing in California, that multifamily has always been the stepchild in the utility programs. It's always, you know, there are single family programs and they run very well, and then there's commercial programs that they get a big bang for their buck, and then in the middle is multifamily. And some of the programs are designed to be really more appropriate to single family, and others are done for commercial, and we end up in the situation where there's a hodgepodge of different programs, and none of them work very well for multifamily buildings. And it all comes down to this issue that none of them, except with the exception of, you know, the new energy upgrade program, which does plan to extend into whole building multifamily, they were never designed to look at the whole building. It was always, you know, like this measure, that measure, or a small package of weatherization things, but not to actually go in and see what does this building actually need, and what, you know, a performance-based approach rather than just assuming that certain measures might be applicable in all types of buildings. And so right now we're not there.
But there's in the energy upgrade program, you know, those are rebates that are not just restricted for low-income properties, but will be accessible to affordable housing developers as well. That's going to be coming online later this year, but probably by fourth quarter, and hopefully with some of the legislation that's pending, that there'll be opportunities on the low-income side for that access to be increased as well.
Yeah, I have to totally agree. I mean, I think the effort to just have to cobble together stuff is monumental when you're us. And so I think, you know, some one-stop shopping place with one acronym, maybe two, 40 is really hard to make. I mean, clearly I'm never going to remember them. Melanie has them committed to memory, but even she's probably, and it's her job. So I think this challenge of, you know, where do you go to get this? And, you know, and I just have to say, we really need to figure out a way to pay for this. As affordable housing developers, money does not grow on trees. We do not get to raise rents. In this building, our tenants pay on average $283 a month for their rent. HUD pays the rest. HUD is not getting a lot of extra money these days. We really need ways to create investment to do this because there's real return. And so GRP was a great idea. We were glad that it, in its first iteration, it was written as a solar program. And we called up the authors and said, no, you got to make this bigger. Because quite frankly, in this building, the thing that's made the biggest difference is insulation. We added insulation last year. We've had no work orders for heat. None. We would get, I don't know, Demetrius probably can tell you, probably 10 or 12 requests a week to come deal with their heating systems because the buildings were too cold. And so, I mean, I think that, you know, GRP was kind of a one-stop shop for a menu of things that really made sense. And to see programs like that, that really are multifamily focused, exist at the state and the federal level, I think would be really huge for us. And we really need the capital. We can sometimes get it in a refinancing, but we can only refinance every 15 or 20 years. And so an energy technology is always changing. So for us to have that resource be available more centrally, I mean, LIEE, I hope AB 1124 is successful, but even if it is, I'm still worried about whether or not we're going to be able to actually use it because of the way the bureaucracy is structured. And so, you know, I think we've got to figure out ways to streamline this stuff so that it can get to these kinds of buildings.
Yeah, I would add one other thing if I can. And that has to do with attracting capital from the private markets. I mean, that's been sort of the thrust behind our effort to create this loan program. And it's for those of you who have, you know, talk to me in the last 24 months, you know, it's been, you know, just a really, really tough experience to both, not so much attract the capital, we've been able to attract the capital, but to deliver it in a way that makes sense. And, you know, Terry's definitely, you know, lives and breathes this, in a way that works for multifamily housing has just been huge. So I know I heard Secretary Donovan speak last summer at a conference, and he referred to the need for training wheels, sort of a credit enhancement training wheels for the capital markets on this type of financing because it has not been proven yet. And I think that from, you know, HUD's standpoint, anything that the department can do toward that end to kind of marry up those resources with the private capital would go a long way to both creating a product that is attractive to owners.
You know, I would just say before we open it up for questions that this is also about telling your story and, you know, figuring out some way to at least get metrics that you're comfortable presenting that, you know, and that you can then sell. Because yesterday we got back the first numbers that come back that Congress sets on the House side for beginning the budget discussion for 2012. And the transportation HUD budget has another significant reduction. So, you know, this is a starting point. But, you know, if anybody in the room thinks that everybody's going to get more money next year, raise your hand. You know, we need to send you off to Washington to talk to some people. But, you know, telling a story that can demonstrate the impact of, you know, I mean, I think telling people that we didn't repair any heaters this year, you know, just that sort of thing. It's not only quality of life, it's also the cost savings. So if you can figure out a way to do that, that really helps, and maybe this organization can take that on. So with that, let's open up for questions, and they can be from how do I do to if you have ideas to share. Well, how about we start right there?
Betsy Morris from Betsy Morris, Planning for Sustainable Communities, a small consulting practice, and East Bay Co-Housing. So for several years, I was working with Community Action Agency of San Mateo, which had a long track record of doing deep energy retrofits, auditings, insulation, the whole bang, funded through LIHEAP, the federal program that you had mentioned. Unfortunately, and I worked with them to also develop relationships with affordable housing groups in San Mateo and Santa Clara County around a proposal to solarize 500 homes in several counties. Unfortunately, under Schwarzenegger, he wanted to close the department, the CSD department, Community Services Department, which oversees these community action agencies. And I'm just curious if any of you have any updates. Are you working with any of the community action agencies in your counties? Because the view that I'm getting is that many of these agencies have now been driven into bankruptcy or have not had enough flexibility or support to enable them to tap. A number of agencies have either closed or gone bankrupt because of the pressure, because of various political pressures and internal pressures that means they can no longer receive these funds, and these funds are therefore no longer potentially available as partnership green funds for both solar and in heating and energy retrofits. They're not available in certain counties now. San Mateo being one of them, Santa Clara.
Yeah, well, actually, San Mateo County is now being served by the Community Resource Project that is headquartered in Sacramento, and they did extend their services to San Mateo County in light of the transition from the Community Action Agency, and I don't have any information on why that happened that way, but there was a lot of movement during the infusion of ARRA funds wherein existing CAP agencies either moved their ARRA funds to other entities or maybe folded and new entities took over, and that took some time to come into play. And unfortunately, we are in this place now where it all has to be spent and there's a lot of pressure.
I guess my question was, those LIHEAP funds are not ARRA funds. They do keep coming in, and it's a potential to do something much deeper than the PG&E drop by a few, PG&E services are getting less and less effective, although they're cheaper to deliver. So I'm just wondering if there's any partnerships that any of you have with CAP agencies on this side of the bay.
For LIHEAP, I guess.
For affordable housing and these community action agencies around LIHEAP.
Yeah, no. Just working with the Weatherization Assistance Program. Yep.
Oh, hi. I'm from this council member from the city of Hayward, and I just wanted to thank all of you. It's been really informative. I think largely because of Eden Housing in Hayward here, the affordable housing community is way ahead of the private community, residential community, in making these changes. And in fact, we're trying to get residential energy standards, green building standards in Hayward, and we have met with the most resistance. You know, we didn't meet with that kind of a resistance when we did the commercial green building standards. As a city, we have our own standards, but we've started to talk about residential energy. And we've gotten more resistance than, any of these other things. And, a lot of it has been think of the time you're in. You know, it's hard enough for us to sell these houses now. And in Hayward, that is even particularly hard. But I think what has come out of here is the savings, and just following up on what you said, I think telling the story of what you get out of these, of why it is a good idea and makes economic sense too, is really going to be more and more important if we're going to move this forward. So that was more of a comment than a question, unless you have any light you can shed on how we can. We're going to have a work session, the city council, in a couple weeks on the residential energy. And I know we're going to get a lot of opposition. And I think we're going to make the program voluntary to begin with. But I wish we could push it forward. And I wish we could make people understand that this is a really good thing for them to do, and economic as well.
I'll just follow up, because I've been working with the staff at Hayward who are working on this residential energy conservation. And definitely in the single-family sector, the education challenge is enormous, because it's coming down to the individual property owners and really trying to disseminate that out, which you don't really have that issue with the commercial building sector. And even multifamily is a more structured sector, and you can identify building property managers, and it's a smaller group of folks that you need to message out to. But I agree, there's a big education need, and certainly starting from incentives and helping people understand the benefits and telling the story is the first place that we need to be.
You know, I also have to say that I think some of the most effective programs that I've seen for changing behavior in the household around issues of, recycling and waste management and other things have really been programs aimed at children in the schools who bring the behavior home. And, get from things that I've seen, it's been as simple as little coupon books that, you bring home and you certify your family replaced all their light bulbs, for example. And that kind of thing, really can drive change. But, if you were all to come together, for example, HUD is, Wayne Waite, whose name was mentioned, who is really the HUD energy guru, and I'm pleased to say that he has actually come back to Region 9 and is now reporting to me. And so we're very focused on what we can do in California, although he'll continue to serve the country. But, he's written this unbelievable description of all the things that's happened with the HUD programs. Well, that will arrive, Congress will get that, and it's a 500-page, read. I'd much that come accompanied with, pictures and stories, that's right there, that because then maybe somebody will dig further. So, it would be worth your effort to just put together something as a group that does that, I think.
I just wanted to note that we are going to be starting to get into schools with the energy upgrade message shortly. We'll have a contest running starting probably in the fall called Energize for the Prize, and working with PTAs and student groups to really sort of help get the message home and encourage these upgrades.
Yeah, I think for us, the kids, it's not a mistake that we're using our kids at the properties that we're working with our after-school programs to get the kids interested. They have to go to school and celebrate Earth Day. And they want to go talk to their peers about what their family did for Earth Day. And I think there's a lot to be said for the methodology. I would also say, I've been to a number of your council hearings. I'm happy to come tell the multifamily story or have Melanie come tell it, depending on what night it is, as part of that effort. But I also think what's important, I know the city recognizes homeowners regularly as part of its council process. You pick a neighborhood and you recognize a homeowner. You might think about how that recognition could be done, in the local newspaper. Similar, people like to be recognized. I mean, that's a very important feature of encouraging the behavior change. And I think, I know for us, we love it when people say, oh, look, you got this thing for being so green. I mean, it makes us all feel good about the effort, because some days the effort is really hard. And so, I think you already have a mechanism for doing that. If you thought about how to expand that, you might actually get some more voluntary behavior. And I think for us, people, once they start doing it, it's not that hard.
I'm Joanne Green for the Affordable Housing Podcast. For more information, please visit us at edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.